Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good takes.
But so many poor choices.
This is The Homance Chronicles, and I am Sarah.
And I'm Nicole.
And I kept it together.
I was like, that was the most boring intro we've had.
Yeah, because I think it's about that time we just had it figured out. It's not going to be figured out. It took me a second. I had to collect my thoughts. I had a pause in the beginning.
You did. You took a little mini pause.
Extra
but
tick.
Maybe I shouldn't say boring. That's the most professional we've started in quite some time.
Yeah. All right. I'll go with that.
Smooth?
Professional. Smooth works. I like smooth.
Smooth. So this is the week of Thanksgiving. We are recording on Monday. Thanksgiving is on Thursday. So there were several times I almost canceled this recording.
Several times, indeed. I was also like, should we keep doing? Okay, we're gonna do it, right? And then I looked at my calendar today to make sure I wasn't the one presenting. And I was like, well, shit, it's not there. Did she cancel? And then it loaded. I was like, damn it.
Nope. It's been there. And it's been my turn for quite some time.
The whole time.
But I don't know what the deal was. I don't know if my brain's already like, hey, it's vacation time, even though I'm not taking any vacation.
Right. Because you don't when you're your own boss. You just don't
work. I might not work on Friday, but like, I'm not going anywhere. It's not like I'm getting ready to be on a beach or anything. I don't know what's happening. I have senioritis for Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, man. I've had senioritis since the beginning of November. My brain is just shut down. It's silly. It's like, hey, it's cold. Yeah. Let's go ahead and go away now.
Well, now that I'm thinking about it, though, I had plans every day, Thursday through Sunday.
Oh,
so that's a lot for an introvert who stays home all the time.
Right.
I should say plans
schedule
with other people where I was social.
I mean, yeah, and that's pretty impressive.
Each day was a different group of people.
And group of socials. Yeah.
So I think today I just was like, wow.
Hearing about it.
Yeah, I think today I was like, well, damn, I guess that caught up to me. But don't worry, I pushed through.
I mean, I'm proud of you. I'm really excited, actually. I was ready for a Nicole story today after the whole day.
All right. Well, I also used Thanksgiving as my inspiration for today's Hoe of History.
Oh, shit.
So, when trying to start the story, yes.
Why do I immediately go, oh, Pocahontas? Like, what the fuck? Why, Sarah?
No, I think that's a natural response. I think
that's fair.
You immediately go, oh, so your story is about pilgrims or like.
No, Pocahontas.
Or Pocahontas or whatever. I mean, I feel like that is fair. But the whole point of our podcast is to highlight women who maybe haven't received the recognition that they should have, especially women that we think we should know who they are and we don't. And so my story, actually, that's what I was gonna say, like, when starting it, I was like, well, how do I start this? She, like, nobody knows who she is, right? But your natural instinct is that it's more directly correlated,
right?
So I'm actually just going to read word for word an excerpt from
Perfect.
One of the sources. So I feel like even as a marketer slash writer slash podcaster that it's totally fine to steal from other people when you can't think of something better. You know, just make sure that you give them the credit. So
exactly.
Brandon Millett, he wrote an article in 2021 for philanthropyroundtable.org. Okay. And it's about our whole of history, but I really liked the way that it started. And it says, this week, meaning Thanksgiving week, 53 million Americans will travel by planes, trains, and automobiles to create Thanksgiving with family and friends, eating turkey, watching football, and of course, expressing gratitude for their blessings and good fortune. But how much do we really know about the origins of this holiday? Why do we gather on the last Thursday of each November specifically for the purpose of giving thanks? And this is where the quote unquote mother of Thanksgiving comes in.
Oh, Jesus. Fuck yeah.
So thank you, Brandon, for a strong start.
Yeah, Brandon. Shout out to you.
So this week's Hoe of History, which you'll appreciate, her name is Sarah.
And I'm not the mother of Thanksgiving.
No. Sarah Josephia Hale. She was actually born with her maiden name as Buell. She was born on October 24th, 1788. And she was an American writer, activist, and editor.
1788?
So yes, ma'am.
Goodness.
So she was born in Newport, New Hampshire, to Captain Gordon Buell, a Revolutionary War veteran, and Martha Willitsley Buell. Her parents believed in equal education for both genders. So this was at a time when people believed that only boys should get an education and not girls.
Could be educated.
So Miss Sarah was an avid reader and homeschooled. Much of her learning was self-taught, but she was homeschooled by her mother and her older brother, Horatio. He attended Dartmouth.
Oh,
so
perfect.
He would bring home what he learned that day and then teach it to Sarah.
That's so smart and great. I love that.
Yes. So Dartmouth awarded a diploma to Horatio. And then he awarded a diploma to Sarah.
That's so sweet.
And he declared she had earned her degree in the arts summa cum laude.
It's already so heartwarming.
So from an early age, Sarah noticed that, quote, all of the books I saw, few were written by Americans and none by women. And so she was inspired to promote the reputation of her own sex and do something for her own country.
There we go.
So when she says few were written by Americans, it's because most of what you were getting in publication was coming from Britain.
Mm-hmm.
So
even
at the age of eight,
completely separated from them. Still getting our literature.
Yes. So at the age of 18, it's now 1806. She started teaching at a school. However, women were not allowed to be teachers at the time.
I'm going to say, how, Sway? How?
Yeah. So she, I guess she just did it anyway. So she started, you know, upsetting the world at 18. And then in 1811, at 23 years old, she met a Freemason and lawyer. His name was David Hale. They dated for 2 years and then got married in 1813. So David was also very supportive of Sarah's desire to learn, teach, and write. I don't have this like in my notes, but just from memory, there was like a really cute quote about her talking about their marriage and how they would spend 2 hours every night like learning, reading, teaching each other things. Like they allowed each other from 8 to 10 to p.m. to like have their just mutual learnings or whatever.
Just info dumping on each other. I love that.
Yeah, so he was super supportive. So she wrote short stories and articles, and they ended up being published in local newspapers. And she was doing this while also having five children. So she
had
She had her children back to back to back. Like,
yeah.
Between, they only had 2 years that they were married without kids. And then from 1815 to 1822, she was spitting out babies. And she was actually pregnant with their fifth child when her husband, David, suddenly and very unexpectedly passed away from pneumonia.
No.
I know. It's so sad. She never remarried.
How could you after that? How could you?
She wore black the rest of her life as a sign of perpetual mourning.
Yeah, I feel you, girlfriend. I feel you. Oh, tragic. And so she had all these children. She lost her husband, but she's a highly educated lady.
Right. But she struggled to support herself. I mean, there really weren't a lot of options for women to make an income. And so she turned her hobby of writing poems and articles into her source of income.
Good.
And her husband's Freemason Lodge actually helped her publish a collection of poems. And it was titled The Genius of Oblivion and Other Original Poems. And throughout the rest of her career, the Masonic movement continued to support her. So
that's really cool.
That's nice. Yeah. I mean, she did try some other things before writing, but they failed. And so she just was like, I got to stick with what I know.
Mm-hmm.
So she then started submitting her stories and poems to literary magazines, and they quickly gained attention of editors and like respectful editors from leading periodicals. So she was getting a little bit of success. And so then she decided to write a novel, and she wrote the novel called Northwood, A Tale of New England. And this is in 1827. And so it depicted home life in the early Republic, with the contrast between North and South. And it very heavily discussed the issue of slavery. And she was very much against it. And so she called slavery a stain on our national character.
Yes.
And during this time, there was obviously growing economic tensions between North and South. However, her stance basically in the novel supported that you should be relocating the nation's African slaves to freedom in Liberia. And she got actually positive response.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Hmm.
So with the publication of Northwood, that pretty much established her career. And she was one of the first American women novelists and the first of her gender. Well, either gender, really, to write a book about slavery. So,
I mean, strong start. Strong fucking start.
So then Reverend John Blake loved Northwood, and he asked Sarah to move to Boston to serve as the editor of his journal, The Ladies Magazine. And so that was the first substantial magazine in the United States for women. So she agreed. And from 1828 until 1836, she served as editor in Boston, but she preferred the title editress.
And good on her. I would too if I was in her position.
She was the first female editor of a magazine in the United States.
Editress.
Yes. So she had very high editorial standards. And so she only accepted original material from Americans and would seek out material from women.
A true patriot.
Well, like I said, it was all coming from Britain.
No, I love it.
So she solicited for female contributors. She specifically only wanted to print material that she thought would like help improve the lives of her readers. She stayed with a magazine for a few years until there were some economic issues. And so we'll get into that in a second. But
are you doing air quotes economic issues, or did somebody just want her out?
No. And she ends up staying on. Magazine gets bought out. But anyway, so the ladies magazine then turns into American Ladies Magazine specifically to reflect Sarah's editorial policies. So they added American in front of it because she was so like staunch and wanting it to be. Yes.
All right. I'm here for this.
So she regularly wrote and published articles and editorials, trying to, how can I say this? Trying to show the benefits of women getting an education. Okay. And so, she wanted to use her influence to make sure that other women would be able to progress. She, in the first issue of Ladies Magazine, she wrote, "In this age of innovation, perhaps no experiment will have an influence more important on the character and happiness of our society than the granting to females the advantages of a systematic and thorough education."
Oh.
And she wrote that when only half of American women were taught to read.
I was going to say, like, she had half an audience, huh? Dang. Did she, I wonder if she had employed any or published any stories from women that we are not aware of that are just also like her, like changing paradigms and stuff.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure she published stories from women that we could add to our list of influencers. So during her years in Boston, she also became involved in several social causes. And so she was the founder of the Seamen's Aid Society to assist the serving families of Boston sailors who died at sea. And she did fundraising for the completion of the Bunker Hill Monument. She raised like $30,000 back in the
That's
day.
That's impressive.
For the Bunker Hill Monument. She supported Elizabeth Blackwell, who would become America's first female doctor.
Girl.
She played a key role in the founding of Vassar College, which was the second only all-female college that would actually grant a degree to women.
Mm, gotta love Vassar.
In the U.S., I should say.
Right.
And then in 1830, so now she's about 42, she publishes her second book of poetry called Poems for Our Children. And it contained one of the most famous poems in the English language. Mary Had a Little Lamb. She wrote it. So it was originally called Mary's Lamb and was based on a story from her childhood.
No shit.
Yeah.
Who knew? I didn't, certainly.
I know. We still haven't. We haven't even gotten to the Thanksgiving part yet.
I was going to say, like, the moment it's building at this point. But holy cow, that's so cool. So Mary Had a Little Lamb was actually a poem invented by a very patriotic woman in the United States.
Yes.
And not some random European translation. That's so cool. Man. Mm-hmm. Man.
Yep. So then in 1837, Louis Antoine Gatti of Philadelphia, he wanted to hire Sarah as the editor of his journal, Gatti's Ladies Book. Or Gatti's Ladies Book? I'm not sure. He bought the ladies magazine that had then been turned into American Ladies Magazine. So he basically bought that magazine because it was having financial issues and merged it with his journal. So then she began she was the main editor now of the expanded Gatti's Ladies Book. And she actually, when she took the job, was in Boston, but he was in Philadelphia. She refused to move to Philadelphia until her son, her youngest son, was done attending Harvard because she was with him in Boston.
Oh, my.
I know. Out of you got five kids and the youngest one is going to Harvard. Like, this woman.
I'm blown away. This is so cool.
So she remained the editor at Gatti's for 40 years.
Oh, my God.
I know.
40 years? Unobstructed, I imagine.
She did not retire until 1877 when she was almost 90.
90? Oh!
So during this time, over this course of 40 years at this magazine, then plus the other years at the other one, she is now one of the most important and influential leaders of American taste.
Man.
So Gotti's ladies book or whatever didn't have any competitors, or at least not significant ones. So the influence from that magazine was insane. Yeah. And its readership was the largest of its day, with over 150,000 subscribers who were from North and South.
Oh, no shit.
And so Sarah herself is considered one of the largest influences on American life, like everyday to day life.
I'm so excited to hear what she did. If she is the reason we have Thanksgiving, it's going to be blowing my noodle. Oh my God, go she into is. It, please.
So she had many famous quotes that advocated her way of thinking in the magazine. They were accredited with influencing, you know, fashion and domestic architecture and how you run your home. And they even published house plans that were copied by home builders nationwide.
Could you imagine being so prescriptive and people being like, yes, give me more.
Right?
Yes, I would like another.
I know. So here's the only issue, is that Sarah was very conservative when it came to gender roles in the home. So she often encouraged women to kind of still be more domestic, even though she was such an activist for education. She felt like it was just more proper that women be the ones who make sure that the home is cared for and impart religion on their children and that kind of thing.
Maybe she was just a control freak.
I don't know, but she definitely had conservative views.
Yeah.
So she didn't necessarily support the women's suffrage movement, or women in politics, really. Huh. But it's so hard to like differentiate that from other things based on the time. And I'm wondering if she had a change of heart with that over the years because Probably. Of her influence later. She did use the magazine to advocate for women to even own property, though, like have property rights and stuff.
Yeah, she wanted us to be autonomous. She just didn't want us to participate in that dumb society that they had, I guess.
It's a little...
We don't have reasoning. We're just going to keep going.
Yeah. But she definitely... So I copied this as well, straight from the resource. And it says, as a believer in women's moral superiority...
I mean, yeah.
Sarah urged women to write morally uplifting novels. She also used her position to advance the careers of women missionaries and teachers. In 1851, she founded the Ladies Medical Missionary Society of Philadelphia. The organization fought for a woman's right to go to a foreign land as a medical missionary without the accompaniment of a man.
Hell yeah.
So that's why it's like, it's hard to tell, like, these lines are a little blurry.
Yeah. And we wouldn't know because we weren't there. We had no idea. We have no idea.
So the promotion of women authors was her constant literary goal. So as you mentioned, you know, did she highlight any women that we should know? I don't necessarily have like a list of women, but just you were on track with something there, because she actually, one of her most famous publications was called Women's Record. Women's Record, or Sketches of All Distinguished Women from the Creation to AD 1854. So she put together a book, is one of the first biographical dictionaries devoted exclusively to American women writers. So it was like an encyclopedia of sorts because she didn't want any of these women's accomplishments to get lost throughout history.
Oh my gosh, that's insane.
Yeah.
She's like, you know what? Let me fix this really quick because none of these assholes are going to do it the right way. I'll do it.
Yeah. Yep. Oh,
that's so cool.
So, obviously she was very passionate about many interests and had a lot of campaigns for public good. And so, of course, there was another one that she is very well known for, apparently, but I did not know, and I don't think most people know. She had a decades-long campaign to establish a national day of Thanksgiving.
Oh, my God. It took 10 years. You better enjoy this shit.
Longer. It took longer. She wrote to every president.
Unreal.
For like 40 years.
Good Lord.
So Thanksgiving celebrations were sporadic throughout the colonies in the late 1700s when she was growing up. However, they were very popular in New England where she grew up. So she grew up with them thinking that they were happening everywhere and they weren't. And she just really wanted a deep respect and saw the purpose of traditions and associated Thanksgiving with like her life and felt strongly that it should be a natural celebration. And she believed that a national day of thanks would help to unify families who had been geographically separated as the country quickly expanded from 13 colonies to 30 states. In the mid 1800s. So she wrote in one of her many editorials. In
I was
going to
say, she probably had like fucking trillion of them.
She wrote, though the members of the same family might be too far separated to meet around one festive board, they would have the gratification of knowing that all were enjoying the feast. From the St. John's to the Rio Grande, from the Atlantic to the Pacific border, the telegraph of human happiness would move every heart to gladness simultaneously.
I mean, I'm here for it. This is cool as shit. I thought for sure it was some just, you know, money-making scheme by some corporation. And instead, no, it was this woman in earnest being like, don't worry, loved ones, I'm eating the same meal that you are. No worries.
We're all here together in heart. Yes.
In harmony. Yeah, like I can very much appreciate Thanksgiving a lot more now. I mean, it's always been actually of all of them, aside from Halloween, it's my favorite because of the food.
Sure.
And the fact that it's just one day.
Right.
Not a lot of buildup. You eat some really good food, you watch some good football, hopefully, and you're done. Bye bye bye.
Right. So beginning 1846, through her magazine and personal letters, Sarah made her case to each successive president to establish Thanksgiving as a national annual celebration. Presidents James K. Polk, Zachary Taylor, Millard Fillmore, Franklin Pierce, and James Buchanan all received appeals from Sarah, who by that time was a well-established editress.
I was going to say, it's not like she was a nobody. I wonder if they pass it on. You know how they, you know, leave each other notes at the end of their time at the office. This woman named Sarah will not stop writing in about a day of giving thanks. I don't know what she wants, but I didn't do it. She'll probably write to you too, just a heads up. You know what I mean? Like she's probably in that book.
Maybe. So, you know what we've heard in other stories about President Abraham Lincoln coming through. For female friends here.
Well, he came through for everybody, except for the white man.
But we've mentioned Abraham Lincoln multiple times in other stories and how he would actually, like, read his mail and respond.
Yes.
And it didn't matter that it came from women. Right. And so guess who comes through for her? Mr. President Abraham Lincoln. In 1863, she finally found this sympathetic ear in the White House. With a nation torn apart by the Civil War, she made an appeal to President Lincoln. Just 5 days later, President Lincoln did as Sarah requested, issuing a proclamation to establish a national day of Thanksgiving each year on the last Thursday of November so the American people could celebrate grace and good fortune.
Well, I'll be damned. He said,
in quotes, with one heart and one voice.
Oh, perfect timing.
I
got the chill bumps.
Several years later, Congress passed legislation making Thanksgiving a national holiday. Given the incredible passion that she had for this holiday and her tireless campaign to see it recognized by all Americans, that's when Sarah will now forever be known as the mother of Thanksgiving.
Fucking tenacity. Good Lord.
Huh. So she's been described as Oprah and Martha Stewart combined.
That's a little much, guys. Come on. She's better than that.
I think it was due to her ability to raise funds through things like bake sales.
Yeah. All right. I can see where they leverage.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So she retired from her editorial duties in 1877 at the age of 89. And then that same year, Thomas Edison spoke the opening lines of Mary Had a Little Lamb as the first speech ever recorded on his newly invented phonograph.
Booyaka shao! I wonder if he knew she invented that poem. He was a piece of shit.
I'm sure he knew she wrote it.
What he did for humanity was cool, but he was an asshole for sure.
He had to have known she wrote it.
Who knows?
So 2 years later, after she retired, she passed away at her home in Philadelphia on April 30th, 1879. And there is a blue historical marker at 922 Spruce Street. She is buried in a simple grave in the Laurel Hill Cemetery in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
I mean, Mother's Thanksgiving.
My sources are bu.edu, womenhistoryblog.com, philanthropyroundtable.org, womenshistory.org, our good friends at Wikipedia. And then I also watched a YouTube video from the Daily Bell Ringer on YouTube.
Fuck yeah. Man, I had no idea. I just exist in this time where it's a normal thing. I'm just imagining it's like a Hallmark holiday. No, it was created in earnest by somebody who genuinely felt the people should be together. Man, I love Thanksgiving that much more now.
So anyone who actually listens to this today now has something that they can talk about at the dinner table that is not hopefully going to spur up any kind of family drama.
Politics. Hey guys, aside from politics, did you know
there's a mother of Thanksgiving who wrote every president for like 40 years?
Do you know Thanksgiving was invented by a lady? Yeah. I mean, like that. Uncle misogynist.
Right. Oh God. No, see, that's not the direction we're going to go in.
No, I know. Just saying, if you wanted to be petty, you could.
But on top of the fact though that she had this Thanksgiving campaign, why do we not know that this woman,
I mean, I think you answered it right there,
had insane, well, I guess, yeah, I could have put the period at that this woman, but had insane influence over the United States.
And that's
over
the thing,
America,
like,
for decades and decades.
It was harmless. It actually like can help society chug along. I think she wasn't doing anything detrimental to us. She was actually improving everything, in my opinion.
And yeah.
Unfortunately, how life goes. If you're good at this or you're good at that, it's just expected and then it's accepted. And then we move on without acknowledging that person. But if they fuck up or they create some controversy, the next thing you know, they've got trillions of dollars. They're on the front page of every magazine. And you know exactly what they did. It's a bummer, really.
Man. I know. I just
say her name again for everybody.
Sarah Josephia Hale.
Sarah Josephia Hale. I'm gonna just start. We could just...
So I just am, I guess, a little bit surprised that considering she was the first, like, author to talk about slavery. She's the first woman editor in the U.S. She's part of the first women's magazine. Like,
I mean, this is why
she did a lot of firsts.
Yeah, but this is exactly why we do the show, because people will never know again. Like, it's just such a sickening thing to see. If you know, you look back on our education that we got, and all you hear about were these landmarks, the men who did the landmark things, and that's it. You don't hear about any of the women. Oh, you hear about a couple here and there sprinkled in, the ones they really can't ignore. But otherwise, there's no celebrating. And that's a bummer to me, because this is real. This is like better history than knowing other things that I know. That's for sure. I would have rather had taken a test and written about, you know, this than what Colonel who and so-and-so ate for dinner the night he smashed a bunch of people. Like, I don't give a shit about that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for enlightening us and bringing Sarah to the forefront.
You're welcome. And I don't think that I said it enough throughout the story that this woman did all of this by herself with no husband and 5 children.
Right. And probably literally no support from anybody else in society. Yet her children,
except for the
still
Freemasons occasionally, right?
Oh, there you go. And then also, by the way, her children are still going to colleges like fucking Harvard on top of all of this.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't fail. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. And then in her free time, she was like, well, I need to help other families.
What fucking free time? Like, I'm just so at this point where, like, well, how did this all work out? Like, where did these people find the time? And then I realized they didn't have all the things that we have now to occupy our time.
Right. There were no distractions other than like alcohol and probably drugs of some kind. But and
naked ladies, but that's a whole different story for another day.
But no, there's no TV, there's no podcast, there's no
entertainment is null. It's reading,
yeah, there's,
or playing a game.
I guess the homes were fairly extravagant if you had money, but I mean, for the most part, I feel like it was pretty modest living, you know?
Yeah. Man, this is so cool. Yeah.
So yeah, there you go.
Thanksgiving.
Sarah Josephia Hale, Mother of Thanksgiving.
You know what irritates me the most is that I learned that Thanksgiving was tied to Pilgrims and Indians. And
I know.
The first Thanksgiving ever set and eaten was, you know,
well, but it was centuries apart.
Right. But it was not the Thanksgiving. You know, it translates into our heads as what we do now around the table. Not like,
right,
there is a purpose for that situation, but what we do for Thanksgiving, the real actual reason is completely separated from that.
It is. And
so we're being miseducated.
She took the concept of what had happened initially.
Right.
But after it happened initially, it didn't keep continuing necessarily. And like she said, it only was happening sporadically in certain colonies and in the north or whatever. So, I mean, I think that it has the origination from what we know of Thanksgiving.
Sure.
But
the reason
she turned it into a popular holiday and something that was designated as an actual holiday for a different purpose.
Yeah. The reason it's designated in the United States is completely separate. Oh, man. I love this podcast so much. Hope y'all do too. I just enjoy it.
Well,
thank you.
I, you know, I said I was almost about to like cancel the recording, be like, it's a holiday, let's take the time off. And then I'm like, wait, let me see here.
Yeah,
and
then let me see about this shit real quick.
Just a quick Google away and I was inspired. So
I love this. this inspired me for next week's episode. Yeah.
Okay.
An idea.
Perfect.
I know. All right.
At a girl time?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I still have fur in my mouth.
Oh. Well, attagirls are when we like to pat ourselves on the back for something good that we've done or something good that's happened to us. I recently did major leaf cleanup, and then that expanded to flower bed cleanup and all of the outside stuff. I'm so sore today. My inner thighs, like, it hurts, you know, to get up off the chair, to sit down. I was at my brother's yesterday, and I was going up and down the stairs, and I was like having to grip the handrail. Well, actually, I said to my brother, I'm like, oh my God, my inner thighs, like, oh, this hurts so bad. He's like, what have you been doing? And I'm like,
oh, don't clean you up, worry but... about that. That's so funny.
Anyway, my atta girl is like sticking with it because I almost gave up on that too.
Oh, dang. I didn't realize that. I had a girl. You powered through it.
I did it over two separate days.
Still,
and at one
it.
Point, I was looking at like this one section where it's like not the leaves aren't on the grass, they're on like the landscape part. And I'm like, it'd probably be fine till spring.
Well, just so you know, it is actually healthier to keep your leaves on your lawn because it protects the lawn and all the things in the lawn and the nutrients and the dirt and yada yada.
Not the amount of leaves I have.
No, it's, yeah, it's
because last year,
but
last year there was a pile of leaves on my driveway that, I don't know, it must have been like after I did leaf cleanup or whatever. Anyway, so I shoveled the leaves.
Shoveled?
When the snow came.
Oh.
You know, so it snowed on top of them. I didn't know they were there. And so I'm like, basically, I'm shoveling snow, but I got a big thing of leaves, flicked it over onto the lawn, and where that was, the grass died. So,
context is a little different here.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, I have, like, so I have locust trees, which are really, really messy, and the leaves are really, really tiny. So I'm never going to get all the leaves anyway. They go through the rake.
Yeah, I was going to say, now that you're mentioning it, those are little tiny leaves.
But if you leave too many of them piled up, you'll get bald spots in the lawn.
That's something else, isn't it? I don't know what happened. Like, last year, we had so many leaves. Seth was very, very good at being on top of them, getting them, whatever. And this year, we didn't really have any leaves. And it may be because we cut down a little bit of a tree in the backyard. But
yeah, I think my experience is just extra shitty because the leaves are small. So they like take forever. They blow everywhere when you use the leaf blower. They don't get picked up by the rake either. And
a yard vacuum.
And then I have one, but it's so messy and gross. Cause it rains and the leaves don't dry because there's the tree and then the sun doesn't get through. Anyway, then you get these like banana looking things that fall off of the tree and they're giant. So I have the juxtaposition of like these giant thingies and these tiny leaves, and it's just stressful.
This is a lot.
I'm telling you. That's why it's my atta girl.
Atta girl.
Because if it was big normal leaves, it would be no big deal.
Instead, here we are.
So anyway, micro what's your leaves. Atta girl?
Well, proud of you. By the way,
thank you.
I went back to the gym on Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah. There's that. I finally was like, you know what? I'm just going to go. I need to go. And I allowed myself to go. Well, also I'm feeling physically like if I don't start going now, I'm just never going to get back into it. Like I'm never going to be able to. So I got to start somewhere. So I figure I start this week. I build up some, you know, hunger while I go through these workouts and I can eat like a savage on Thursday. Then also continue this path and just keep going and making myself go when I don't want to go. Like, I don't want to go on Tuesdays after work, but I'm gonna. I don't want to go on Wednesdays after work, but I'm gonna. And then, you know, Saturdays and Sundays or whatever I can do. But I need to make more time for it. And so that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
New Year's commitment? Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, add a girl for getting your ass to the gym.
Thanks. Yeah, we woke up about 8 a.m. on Sunday.
Oh, God.
Well, you know, I don't know.
I can't do morning workouts.
It takes a couple hours for us to get up and out the door and everything. I think we left our house around 10. But, you know, it's like, last thing I want to do on a Sunday is go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather use that time.
You do feel very good. It is, like, very validating and... I don't know. You have a sense of accomplishment before noon.
Right. There's that.
I was doing spin classes at 10:15 on Sunday mornings for a long stretch.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'd just come home and keep moving. Because
mm-hmm.
like once you're a body in motion, you stay in motion. And so I would be like little Energizer Bunny all over. But then by like 3-4 o'clock, I was like, oh shit.
Oh yeah, by 7 o'clock I was like, is it time for bed? Can we go to bed? And he was like, no, we're not done yet. I'm like, we could be, right? We run like I'm in charge. Like I could technically do this. I could go to bed. But yeah.
So if you liked what you heard today. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just gonna say go us.
Oh yeah, go us. If you liked what you heard today, please rate, review, subscribe. It really helps us. I guess that there's like some update that's happening with iOS 17 that is changing the length of time that they allow you to auto download. So if you haven't listened to a podcast in a long time, it will stop auto downloading, which I thought it did that anyway, but I guess that there's some other issue or some other change with the latest update. So especially if you listen to Apple podcasts, make sure that you at least kind of check in with us here and there.
If you don't hear us on a weekly basis, something's wrong.
But also, I mean, it won't download if you don't have enough storage and all that good stuff, right?
Right.
So you can find us on Spotify, our website, homeasschronicles.com, like anywhere else you listen to podcasts as well. You can recommend a Ho of History by DMing us on Instagram at homeas_chronicles or sending us an email, homeaspodcast@gmail.com. We also have a closed group on Facebook, the Homeas Chronicles, a judgment-free zone that has nothing to do with this. And then...
Sure it does.
Ish, right? if you're going to get surprised if you go in there thinking you're going to hear about women of history.
Just hoes.
Yeah, it's really... It's just hoes, period. And then you can get Homeas merch on my Etsy shop, NicoleBonneville.etsy.com.
Wee.
So, happy Thanksgiving.
Homeas out.